Like many of you Unitarian Universalists, known in some circles as people of the words, I love language. I love finding just the right word or phrase to capture something. I love puns and plays on words. I even love grammar. I use subjunctive on purpose. And not to show off, at least I don't think so, I just happen to delight in the rhythm of language, the music of it, and solving the mystery of how words go together correctly. One of the first times I spoke with my spouse was at a gathering of gay employees of a high-tech company. And of course, our meetings were held in the parish hall of a UU church. This was before I knew about Unitarian Universalism. I remember thinking, do they know who's meeting here? I had gotten my first job that had business cards, and so I gave Dale one of my cards, and she said, I feel compelled to reciprocate. And my heart fluttered. Yes, I love language. When President Obama was first elected, do you remember? He gave one of his first speeches or press conferences, and Dale and I were watching it together, and he made a common grammatical error. And Dale didn't even look up. She just kind of patted my arm and said, it's okay. I know, it's okay. Hillary wouldn't have done, I know. She understands me. And I know that I got this love of language from my father, a gift sometimes hard won. One of my earliest memories of talking with my father as a little girl, not yet in school, includes him correcting my grammar and criticizing my overuse of the utterance, But my father was known for his eloquence, and he had this kind of old-fashioned way of speaking that I admired and tried to emulate. True story, when I was in second grade, we had a student teacher for part of the year, and when it came time for her to leave us, we made her this big card with each of us, each second grader, writing a message to her. Some wrote, goodbye, good luck. Some wrote, thank you, or I'll miss you. I wrote, congratulations to a very successful young lady. So much in that story is cringeworthy. I wonder if I spelled successful correctly. But young lady, I mean, who says young lady? A seven-year-old. Now, this was the 1960s, and a lot was changing in the world, but it took a while, right, for that kind of change to make its way to a second-grade classroom. This was a time when men were men and girls were girls. Right? Lady was a polite term, and almost no one said woman. Ms. was a made-up word that people only used with a mocking tone or inside quotation marks. Am I right? Yeah. So language evolves. I hate that. I mean, part of me hates that. I guess I'm glad that language has loosened up a bit since the time of Shakespeare. But now that it's perfect, and by that I mean now that I have mastered its rules, I don't want it to change. For example, I will never use the word dialogue as a verb. Not gonna happen. I mean, we have talk. We don't need, anyway. But what about gender in language? When I was growing up, the proper word to use when the gender was unknown was he or his. If a student wants to succeed, he must do his homework, right? This was the 70s, and we began to see his or her, or his slash her, or sometimes s slash he. But like the word Ms., it took a while for this to be done routinely. More often, it was offered with attitude, with kind of an annoyed look at any feminist in the room who were just ruining everything for the rest of us. It's not about equality, they would say. It's just the way the sentence flows. It just sounds better this way. And besides, It's more correct. Those are the rules of language. It has nothing to do with gender equality. The rules of language are important. But fairness is also important, and inclusion, and seeing yourself represented in the stories of our culture. If all the powerful people in the culture, the ones with the big jobs, are referred to as he or him, then we all learn that every boy can be president. Remember that song? Okay, most of you don't remember that song, but it was a song. Every boy can be president. But it's just a song, right? It's just words. But words are one of the primary ways that we transmit culture and values. There's a riddle I grew up with, maybe some of you remember it too. A father and son are traveling somewhere in a car, and they're in a car accident, and they're taken to the hospital. The father is treated in the emergency room, and the son is taken right into surgery. The surgeon walks into the room and says, "I can't operate on this boy, he's my son." The answer? 40 years ago, 50 years ago, it took us a lot longer to figure that out, right? That the surgeon could be the boy's mother, a woman. If you're not part of the standard, the preferred pronoun he, the generic white male, you have to do an extra step, an internal translation to see yourself in that role or to see anyone that doesn't fit that standard version. And maybe it's just a few seconds. Microseconds even, but over a lifetime, those moments of having to translate into your own identity to see yourself means that a lot of energy is expended that could have been used for other things. How do you measure something like that? Social scientists have developed something called the implicit bias test. It's actually dozens of tests that you can take online, many of them for free, and to see what level of implicit bias you might have in a given area. So assumptions that you make about a person based on their identity. And the thinking is that if you're aware of this implicit bias, then you can work actively to counteract it. That's why congregations that are in search are encouraged to attend a workshop called Beyond Categorical Thinking. Have you already done that here? Okay, we'll probably be doing that. It challenges us to be aware of and examine the effects of implicit bias and other forms of even subtle prejudice that might limit us in imagining who our next minister could be, or who our next president might be. How many of you have ever spent time in a meeting with Unitarian Universalists trying to write something or edit something? Like, I don't know, a bylaw change. So if you've ever been in that room, you know that people will argue passionately about phrasing and grammar, even punctuation. My people. So you know that doing something like that in a large group, say as large as the whole congregation, is difficult. So imagine then General Assembly, the UUA's, the Unitarian Universalist Association General Assembly, where thousands of people gather to do the business of our association. Pretty tough, right, to edit a document in a large room like that. So lots of exciting things happen at General Assembly, but there is also business to attend to. These big plenary sessions where people argue passionately about big issues, but also about word changes, which could be big. So to avoid having 4,000 people trying to rewrite one document, we have something called mini assemblies that are held during the General Assembly where amendments can be offered and voted on. And a few times over the years, I've had the honor of presiding over a mini assembly. And one of them was some years ago now when we were considering some changes to our bylaw governing our campaigns for UUA president. The bylaw change was necessary to move from president serving up to two 4-year terms to serving 1 6-year term. And you can imagine, right, that required some language changes. So there was language in this amendment that read, "The presidential candidate shall be able to have their And someone placed on the agenda for discussion at the mini-assembly an amendment that would correct that grammatical error. Because, as we all know, the word there is a plural adjective. Presidential candidate is singular, and so requires the words his or her or his slash her, right? The adjective needs to be singular to agree with the singular noun. This is like the Super Bowl for me, talking about grammar. So this is going to be an easy one, I thought, just an oversight to correct. And much to my surprise, there was discussion. People were saying that they, there, was more inclusive. And the attorney serving as our parliamentarian, I thought his head was going to explode. He was shaking his head saying, it's a grammatical error. And this is a legal document. And it was getting a little bit out of control. And I was supposed to be in charge. And of course, this was being like recorded and streamed live. If I ever run for office, they'll play that clip over and over again of my excellent leadership over this gathering. So I went to the microphone and I said, okay, we're trying to work this out. We have some competing values here, the value of inclusivity and the value of correct grammar. One person proposed making the noun plural, so then they there would be correct. And I thought that sounded pretty good. And maybe that would be the end of it, and I felt some relief. And then a woman walked to the procedural microphone and said, as the mother of a transgender child, one who does not identify with one gender or the other, this whole conversation has caused me great pain. And my heart stopped. And then it ached with hers. Yes, I love grammar and language and getting things right, but I love people more. Language is a tool for us to use, a way to express what is most important to us. And when it becomes a source of pain, it must change.